So the talk I'm going to give is based on two papers from last year and some work in progress. I'll just write down the HEPS numbers. Okay. The question I want to address is whether or not it's possible that to describe strong gravity at strong coupling, by which I mean gravity at energies which are large compared to the Planck scale, by some kinds of dual theory. Now, at first sight, this seems a kind of idea which is very unlikely to succeed. It's the usual usual idea is that maybe the whole notion of space and time would break down at very short distances of the order of the Planck scale. But in some cases, for example, if you're compactifying, say, to four or five dimensions where you have a gravity, where you have an effective coupling kappa squared, which that kappa will depend on the fundamental Planck scale, say, at 11 dimensions, and also the various moduli to do with the details of the compactification. And it could be that the scale determined by this coupling constant could be very different from the fundamental, say, 11-dimensional Planck coupling constant. So it could be that there could be regimes where the gravity becomes strongly coupled in four or five dimensions, say, but it's still at scales which are large compared to one in which the notion of space and time might break down. And in such a concept, in such a context, it might be possible to have some kind of dual description of gravity in terms of some conventional, semi-conventional theory in space, in space and time, perhaps some kind of field theory or string theory. And that's the kind of idea I want to try and look at.
So are you also looking then at low energies as compared to the scale?
It will become clear as it goes on. At the moment, I just want to just try and build up the general idea, and then we'll try and develop that more closely.
So one question that would come up is how you'd account for the spectrum of black holes and so on, energies higher than the complex scale.
Yeah.
In other words, the spectrum of this theory has to match onto the spectrum of black holes at that energy.
Right. I mean, this is at energies which are Planckian. It's not quite clear what to expect. We know that one kind of picture we have is that as you turn up in energy, that then black holes will typically form, and that we know that a lot of the degrees of freedom are then somehow encoded in the horizon, perhaps. And there's some holographic description is likely to be much more appropriate than the usual field theory description. And from what we've learned from holography, that gravity somehow, especially at strong coupling, will be likely to be something which is not local in the usual sense, perhaps, is likely to involve very different kinds of degrees of freedom from what we usually expect. And what I want to try, the approach I'm going to take is to try and use some of the ideas which have been so successful in understanding strong coupling limits of other theories. And in particular, much of this, our success in understanding strong coupling limits of other theories has been based on supersymmetry. Supersymmetry has suggested, has often suggested what the strong coupling behavior of something should be. And it turns out that, at least in one particular case, which is going to be the case of my talk, supersymmetry has a very striking suggestion for what a strong coupling limit of gravity in a certain regime might be. And it's quite remarkable that that it's something which is led to by supersymmetry. It's something which is a non-geometric formulation of gravity, which in which there's no metric, but there's some more general concept than geometry coming in. And so it's certainly a regime of, it would be a way of exploring a regime of M-theory, where the usual supergravity picture, which has been the main theme of much of the research on M-theory, will not be valid, and there'll be some other kinds of degrees of freedom which will be coming into play. So as usual with dualities, is something which is virtually unprovable. But what I'll try and do is accumulate some evidence, some circumstantial evidence to show how that it might be true and that it fits in with what we do know. And I'll try and give a critical appraisal of some of the evidence and what some of the evidence for and against this theory. And one reason for doing this is also that it's very closely analogous to some of the other dualities which we've become more familiar with. And it also throws into sharp relief some aspects of those more familiar dualities which are not really understood at the moment and some of the things which we needed to make the what I'm proposing work are also what's needed to really understand what's going on in more familiar dualities, such as S-dualities and non-abelian gauge theories in four dimensions. But that's the kind of direction I want to go in. The kind of coupling, kind of things, kind of limits I'm thinking about are ones where you take, so the Planck length. So this is a sort of limit in which you're taking Planck length going becoming large, or more precisely.
4D, right? 4D.
This is in d-dimensional gravity. So I'll call it LD. And D will be 5 later on, but let me put out, keep it discussion arbitrary. And I will be, or more precisely, I should be looking at energies which are large compared to the energy scale given by 1 over D. And this is to be contrasted with the usual kinds of dualities people think about where, for example, in string theory, one typically takes a coupling constant which is an expectation value of some scalar, takes a limit in which some of these will become infinite. So one's going to a boundary of moduli space. And in doing that, one's losing some of the scalars in the theory and some of the moduli. So I want to take similar limits in which, instead of doing that, I keep all the moduli. I don't lose any scalars, but I'm although they may individually be scaled. So I'm not losing any scalars, but I'm looking at I'm really looking at changing the fundamental scale of the theory. So that's the basic setup of what I want to try and do. And the approach I want to do is to look at an analogous duality, and I want to sort of use that as the analogous duality, which is much better understood, and use that as a kind of guide to what to expect. And that's to look at five-dimensional super Young Mills with 16 supersymmetries, which is a theory which has got a vector field and 5 scalars and a USP4 or SO5R symmetry. And it has a dimensionful coupling constant, which is a G Young Mills squared, is a length of the theory. And this is a non-normalizable theory. So we expect new physics to emerge at energies which are comparable to 1 over L. And so it's, I regard it as being embedded in a consistent theory. And there are two natural ones come to mind. One is, five-dimensional heterotic string given by dimensional reduction on a 5 torus, which has got a super Young Mills sector together with supergravity plus an infinite tower of massive supermultiplets. And the other one is, the other natural case is in the D4 brain, where this lives as part of the degrees of freedom on living on the D4 brain, which will couple to massive modes on the brain and also to bulk fields. So, but in both cases, these are pictures where you have super Young Mills as a five-dimensional super Young Mills existing as a sector of a consistent theory. And a lot of what I'll say won't depend on the details of how it's embedded. So the analog with gravity is that this fundamental length scale will play the role of the Planck length in the gravitational theory. And so I want to consider strong coupling in which I take J. Young Mills squared to infinity, or becomes large, or more precisely, I want to look at i.e. energies large compared to its scale. So this is just a shorthand for saying I really want to focus on energies which are large. So in a theory with so many supersymmetries, the simplest thing one might expect is that one keeps a lot of the structure of the theory. So expect to keep 16 SUSEs, the SO5 R symmetry, and I want to keep and 5 times some integer times the number of scalars. So in the Young Mills, these will take values in the adjoint of a gauge group. So this would so this n would be the dimension of the gauge group. So So I want to look for a dual description of these in this case. But in this case, there are extra light states. Let's just go over here. So what are these? If you are in four Euclidean dimensions, here's our four. If I look at Yang-Mills theory in R4, there are instanton solutions, F equals star F, which are localized at some point in R4. And then these can be lifted to some solution in 4 plus 1 dimensions. But I'm just multiplying the solution by time, and this point in R4 becomes a time-like world line. And so you get a Noort-Brain solution in super Yang-Mills. I'll refer to it as an instantonic Noort brain with mass which will be proportional to an integer, the instanton number, divided by G Yang Mills squared. So in a strong coupling limit, then there'll be particles with this for every integer here. So if the n is instanton number, it'd be the modulus of the instanton number occurring there. And this is very similar.
Are there single particle states like that, or there's multi-particle states for n different from one?
That depends on our really short distance physics.
Well, right. Yeah, that's, but that's why I was asking.
There's a natural way in which you can have a single bulb state fluidly.
Well. It depends on arbitrarily short distance physics.
Yes, what is it?
There are presumably lots of ways in which you wouldn't also.
Right. Yep. So that's why I was asking whether in this case,
you're asking for threshold bounce.
I mean, as far as Noort-Brain solutions, there's certainly an instanton number with arbitrary, an instanton solution with arbitrary instanton.
Separate them.
Yeah.
Right. And the question is there a threshold bounce state?
If you have the B field, which is an allowed procedural, then there is.
But he's considering Lorentz invariant thing. So I mean, there are ways to do what you say, but I'm curious as to whether that's what's happening in the theory that he's contemplating.
Are you thinking a specific embedding when you say this? That there are going to be single particles things like that, or do you think that it's true for any embedding of this theory into a bigger theory?
I mean, these are good questions. I mean, certainly in the embeddings which have been studied, I mean, this is usually taken to be the case, although it hasn't been discussed in detail.
So the M5 ring on a circle is not to do what you're saying.
Yeah, so...
Zero theory on a circle. Yeah. But do you think that that's true of any theory that ever gives you 4 plus 1 angles at long distances?
Well, the key issue is whether or not there's... given that these are... Well, it's a question about whether the short... The key issue is whether these are bound states or not.
Regular, so it's universal.
For instance, in the five-dimensional theory studied by Seibert for small nf, we don't get threshold bound states.
Well, those happen for a number of different theories.
Yeah, I know, but I was giving an example of similar theories in which.
Okay. For 16 superchargers, the moduli space is hyperkähler, so so it's going to be independent of the embedding because it's unique.
Okay, so let me restrict myself to the case to those theories where it is a bound state, just to and then we can just if it necessary we can come back to that point later. The argument is that then this is very similar to what happens in type 2A string theory, where you have D0 brains with an infinite tower of massive D0 brains becoming massless. And again, in that case, the issue of bound states is a crucial one. But the suggestion is that if these are bound states, then this would be natural to interpret as an extra dimension. Decompactifying with the radius, this would be a Klutz-Klein spectrum if the radius went like G Yang-Mills squared. So the suggestion is that at strong coupling, then an extra dimension opens up. So we want a theory. So this is saying that we want a theory in six dimensions with these properties. There are two theories with 16 supersymmetries in six dimensions. The obvious one to think of first of all is the one with is super Yang-Mills in D equals 6, which has got 1, 1 supersymmetry, one right-handed and one left-handed supersymmetry, and that fails. It has 16 supersymmetries, but it only has SO4R symmetry, has 4 times n scalars, and so on. But there is another theory, which is the 2-0 theory, which is which does have 16 supersymmetries, SO5R symmetry, and 5 n scalars. And so the conjecture is that the strong coupling limit should be a 2-0 theory in D equals 6. And this is a superconformal theory. But if I write down here, can people see? With superconformal group OSP star H/4 with bosonic subgroup 06, 2, the conformal group in six dimensions times USP4, which is the same as SO5, together with 16 ordinary supersymmetries and 16 conformal supersymmetries. And this fits in with the embedding. This is the in this case this becomes the M5 brain on the circle of radius R, and the 2, 0 theory is the effective world volume theory for the living on the M5 brain, and this becomes the strong coupling limit of the five-dimensional heterotic string is the theory which is given by the 2-0 theory in six dimensions, which is given by 2B compactified on K3. And then compactified again on the circle of radius R. So at strong coupling, you get a decompactification to a six-dimensional theory, which is the 2B theory compactified on K3, or the M5 brain or the D4 brain decompactifying to an M5 brain. And one striking thing is here is that although in these theories one has a complicated theory, where one has this 2, 0 theory coupled to lots of other fields. There's a decoupling limit in which one's left with precisely just this 2, 0 theory. And it's been argued that this conformal field theory exists in its own right as an independent theory, which can be decoupled from those. And so another way of embedding, if that's true, then another way of embedding the five-dimensional super Yang-Mills theory in a consistent theory is embedding it in a 2, 0 theory on a circle of radius R. And in fact, it's this embedding in here, which is then embedded within these two different pictures here. So it suggests that this is kind of a universal picture. Although it's based on just a case of two evidence from two examples. So the 2, 0 theory in the Abelian case is based on a supermultiplet where you've got five scalars, four fermions, but the vector field doesn't go to a vector field in six dimensions, but to a two form with self-dual field strengths, which I'll denote by a plus. And in the Abelian case, this is what you get, and one can check that taking this theory in six dimensions and dimensionally reducing on a circle, you indeed get an Abelian gauge theory. But doesn't seem to be any way of writing down a field theory realization of this 2, 0 theory, which is interacting, which in other words, which dimensionally reduced will give five-dimensional super Yang-Mills theory with non-Abelian interactions, but which is local and covariant in six dimensions. And there are various no-go theorems showing that that there can't be a local field theory description of that. But nonetheless, there's a lot of evidence that this theory exists. For example, there's a matrix theory realization of representation of this theory, and for large n, there's a realization of this in terms of an anti-de Sitter, a holographic theory in seven-dimensional anti-de Sitter space. So an important point is that this six-dimensional theory doesn't have any dimensionful parameters. It's a conformal field theory. And the dimensionful parameter here, the dimensionful length of the five-dimensional theory, emerges as a compactification modulus, as a radius and the circle of compactification. So, as I said, so whatever this theory is in the interacting case, it's not a local interacting field theory. It's got some new kind of interactions, which is something which you can't represent in the usual field theory way.
I mean, it is a field theory. This isn't a Lagrangian field theory.
It's not even a field equations. When you've got the Abelian case, there isn't a Lagrangian because you've got a self-dual field strength.
Yeah.
But there are field equations in the Abelian case.
Yeah.
But one can't deform in the Maxwell theory. One could deform. I can look for deformations of that, which will give rise to the, which will lead you to the non-Abelian Young-Mills interactions. But there are no local covariant modifications of the field equations. Which
are there any proofs of the claim that you're saying now? You know, the no-go theorems are only about the Lagrangian.
I mean,
there are no-go theorems in the literature, but as with all no-go theorems, there are assumptions which go into that.
Most conformal field theories, even in two dimensions, don't have Lagrangian representations either. That doesn't mean they're not field theories.
In two dimensions, most conformal field theories aren't actually field theories in the conventional sense. Something where you can write down the classical field theory, but
that's a classical
field theory.
And for that, you need a small parameter,
right? Which you don't have.
A field theory doesn't have to have a classical.
I don't want to say this too strongly. What I'm saying is that there isn't a classical theory which dimensionally reduced will give rise to the interacting Supi Young-Mills theory.
That's fine.
But there's a lot of evidence to believe that this theory does exist as a conformal field theory, and one can write down correlation functions and so on for that.
Could you just repeat what you said before? This is a field theory dual on some AD7 space?
Yes, so this, if you take M theory compactified on the four sphere to ADS7. That's So it's just switching 4 and 7 around. Then it's exactly an analogous construction. And that theory is on the boundary of the ADS7. There's a six-dimensional conformal field theory, and it's this one.
It's near horizon geometry of M5 prime.
And that's another reason for thinking that this theory should exist. So. The case I want to consider in analogy with that is five-dimensional n equals 8 supergravity ungauged. So this is a theory which has got the Biot-Sonic sector consists of a metric, 27 vector fields, and 42 scalars. And these sit inside a so it's got a symmetry groups which are E6 rigid cross an R symmetry which is USP8 or SP4, and these 42 scalars live in the coset space E6 divided by USP8. So this is again non-renormalizable. There's a fundamental length scale, the five-dimensional Planck length. So the action looks like 1 over L cubed. Lagrange looks like 1 over L cubed R plus 1 over L F squared, and so on, schematically. And again, this is a non-renormalizable theory. So again, I'll embed it in something which is consistent. And the only thing I can think of is M theory or type 2 string theory toroidally compactified. So it's M theory on T6. It doesn't seem to be a brain alternative there. So I want to ask, I want to investigate whether it's possible to play a similar game where I take this length becoming large, or in other words, look at energies large compared to that length, that energy scale. And so the simplest thing in which way in which this could happen is if something similar to this happened, in which one kept all 32 supersymmetries, one kept USP 8 R symmetry and kept all 42 scalars. So so the idea is to see whether there's any kind of candidate theory for something which could arise, which play the analog of the 2,0 theory in this case.
So now a general question about your philosophy or viewpoint. So you're looking at scattering at energies large as compared to the Planck scale, say, or you're looking at the property of the theory. And so there you expect sort of everything to be a black hole, roughly speaking, if you're looking at generic states above the Planck scale.
Yeah, I'm not sure what to expect beyond above the Planck scale.
Well, that's where you're going, though, right?
Yeah, I mean, I expect things to be forming into black holes quite a long time before we get to the Planck scale. Well, it's a question about which. I mean, it's a question about.
Yeah. I mean, in this limit, basically, you know, you can either fix energy and take L to infinity, or fix L and take energy to infinity. Let's do the latter. And then your generic configurations that you're looking at will presumably be black holes.
I'm not quite sure. I mean, the analogous question over here would be to ask what's happening over here, and maybe there'd be arguments suggesting that the degrees of freedom would be somehow everything would form into glue balls or something like that as you turned up the coupling. But that turned out to be not such in the supersymmetric theory. It turned out that looking at it this way was a very fruitful way of looking at it. But that still raises the question about what happens to the glue balls in this picture. And I don't have any good physical picture as to what's happening there.
Chris, I'd ask you another question.
Yeah.
I'll try to ask you again. We know that all the asymptotic limits of M theory moduli space toroidally compactified to 3 dimensions or higher are classified and can be always met by dualities either 2M theory on large tori or type 2A on large tori string units, type 2B string units, and so forth. Right, so do you really work with an asymptotic region of the M-theoretical moduli space, or do you work with something in the middle?
I'm in the middle.
Okay.
I mean, the reason is that, I mean, if you starting off with M-theory on T6, you have this moduli space which is E6 over USP8, and all the different ways of going to the boundary have been classified, so some correspond to decompactification of some of these toroidal directions, and some have more exotic interpretations. Those have all been classified. And in each of those limits, as you're going to the boundary, you're losing some of these scalars. I'm taking a limit where I don't lose any scalars, I'm investigating whether it's possible to consider that limit.
Okay, so your new theory should come from M-theory compactification on a Planckian T6, roughly, and to study energies which are bigger than 11-dimensional Planck scale, which is the same like the 5-dimensional Planck scale.
Yeah, that would be one way of thinking about it.
Chris, can I also ask you, Mark, I'm still not sure what the goal is. You want a theory which is not, in fact, simply an M-theory compactification, but is a theory in its own right.
Yeah, so it's like, in five-dimensional Young Mills, I could start off with a lot of things which come from, there's lots of limits which go up to 6-dimensional, 7-dimensional Young Mills, 10-dimensional Young Mills.
Right.
But then there's this other branch, you go up to this 2,0 theory instead.
And, wait, this has a different scalar moduli space from M-theory compactified?
There's some things which. Well, okay. Perhaps let me finish the. Let me just finish the story and then come back to addressing these. Because a lot of these questions have a lot to do with how one thinks about the interactions in these theories. So let me just say a bit about the philosophy I'm going to approach. I'm going to be sort of a lot of what I'll say is something which I can sort of prove rigorously in the for free theories. Just like here in the free theory, I can look at dimensional reduction of this, I could write down this 2,0 theory in six dimensions, dimension reduce it and get a five-dimensional Maxwell theory.
Uh-huh.
And so one everything's under control in the free theories. In the interacting theories, because we've got, we don't really know how to think about the interacting 2,0 theory, there's lots of, the most interesting questions one would like to ask with this knowledge that you have an interacting 2,0 theory, which one doesn't know how to ask. But so what I want to do is set up an analogous, so what I'm going to do going down this column is set up an analogous picture for gravity. And all the good questions which people will be asking me about what's happening in gravity, there'll be an analogous question over here, which I won't be able to answer either of those. But at least what I want to say is to show that there's an analogous structure which can happen in gravity, which is completely analogous to what's happening in this story here, which we have lots of reasons for believing. And I don't know whether what I'm going to say over here is true. I mean, but it would be very, even if it doesn't actually work out in the interacting theory, even though it does in the free theory, it would be very interesting to know, understand in more detail what the difference is between what's happening over here from over here. And if nothing else, one of the goals would be to we'll give a better understanding of perhaps about what's happening in the 2,0 theory.
So what's the precise analogy with Steve's question about the black holes and the...
I'm not sure, but it might be they've been asking what happens to glue balls as you go to strong coupling in the Young-Mills theory. Maybe the theory, I mean, you might expect that it might become a theory of glue balls or something like that.
But Chris, isn't the answer that you're just going to work at the linearized level for now? And so if you start, if you just take linearized gravity, there's no black holes. So you could take linearized gravity take the limit that you're talking about.
Yeah.
But how does that make sense? You're turning up the coupling, you're taking the infinite coupling limit.
Yeah.
Okay, perhaps, okay, let me address that. I mean, there's two coupling constants. So if I write the metric as h mu nu plus lambda h mu nu, well, it's a dimensionless coupling constant. If I write reaction as r of eta plus lambda h, I divide by 1 over lambda squared and a dimensional coupling constant, which will be in five dimensions, will be this length to the cubed. There are two different things. As far as when both lambda and l are non-zero, I can absorb lambda into h and the lambda doesn't play any role. But there's a limit in which I take lambda to zero, which truncates me down to the quadratic theory here. And that's the free limit. But this Planck scale is still there. This length scale is still there, sort of normalizing the action, just like the Young-Mills coupling constant is in the Young-Mills theory, even in the Abelian case. It doesn't play any role in the interactions, but it normalizes the action.
Well, let me see. Normally, the coefficient there is fixed, say, by quantization, by canonical commutation relations.
So which coefficient?
The coefficient lambda.
Well, here it's just I could absorb it into a redefinition of h, so it's
but he's constant. Your L is not what's normally called a Planck scale.
Yeah.
Well, can we phrase what your goal is maybe a little bit? I mean, what happened over here was we had embeddings of your d equals 5 superangles into string theories in various ways, but there's a particular limit in which an infinite amount of junk decouples and it's embedded in a much smaller theory called the 2,0 theory. Here you have an embedding of this thing into M theory toroidally compactified, and you're going to show us that perhaps there's a limit in which an infinite amount of stuff junk decouples and it's embedded in some much smaller theory.
Well, okay. Why don't you let me finish this much of the blackboard, and then you can, I can tell you what I'm about to do, and then you can, see.
It's pointless arguing that you can't do it until you.
Well,
yeah.
Yeah,
I think you should go ahead.
Can I ask one last simple question? So you've embedded this in, for instance, in M on T6.
Yeah.
And what you're going to say is you can consider a limit where L goes to infinity with higher dimensional L fixed, I guess.
I'm not going to say anything quite so precise. Let me say.
Let me
say.
Yeah.
I mean, the situation is more complicated than that, and for reasons which won't become clear until I've said what I'm going to say next. So.
Someone speak right for 5 minutes.
Yeah. Okay.
That sounds unlikely, but okay. So one guide as to what to look for is that one could take this theory with n equals 8 supersymmetry and decompose it into n equals 4 multiplets. And some of those multiplets will be vector multiplets of this form. And if it was the case that the situation would be similar to what happened here, that a vector multiplet in five dimensions, when one went to strong coupling, here one's taking the coupling constant to be large again, that went to six-dimensional 2, 0 multiplets, this would suggest that at least for some of the vector fields in here, they should go to 2, 0 multiplets, but in six dimensions. But these are an irreducible representation of the USP8, so if some become six-dimensional, then all have to become six-dimensional, if we're keeping the USP8. And similarly, if this is an irreducible supermultiplet, if some of the fields become six-dimensional, then all should be. So this suggests looking for a six-dimensional theory. And moreover, if we saw for the vector fields that the coupling constant became the modulus of compactification, so you ended up with a theory which was conformal without coupling constants. And so this suggests that we should look for a superconformal theory in six dimensions.
Where did the 6 come from again?
Okay, the argument, this is not a proof by any means. This is just a motivation saying that since the vector multiplet, take the n equals 8 multiplet, decompose it into n equals 4 multiplets. Some of those are vector multiplets, which are of this form. We saw that in this, at least in this context, within these embeddings, that vector multiplets at strong coupling wanted to become 2, 0 multiplets in six dimensions.
So there are instantons again?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So there are issues here about the fact that they're instantons in an abelian gauge, for an abelian gauge field, so they would be sort of zero size and singular. But nonetheless, there are issues here which I was quite planning to come to later as to whether or not how one thinks about these objects. There are singular BPS solutions. And there are singular solutions of the supergravity theory, which preserves supersymmetry. And again, there's one of the questions which comes up again and again in these games, which is, do we really do those correspond to BPS states in the real M theory? And so, one of the assumptions going into that is that these do.
You don't want all of them to become BPS states, right? Otherwise, you'd have 27 of these colors.
Yeah, I do. Let me just go on a bit more and then. And see. So we're looking for a six-dimensional theory which has all these properties. The natural thing to look at is six-dimensional supergravity, which has got 2, 2 supersymmetry. And that fails on every one of these conditions except having 32 supersymmetries. But there's another theory in six dimensions which has got another multiplet in six dimensions which has got 4, 0 supersymmetry, which has got 32 supersymmetries, has a USP8 R symmetry, it's got a spectrum with 42 scalars, is six dimensional, has got 27 soft dual 2 forms. I should have said that I wanted 27 soft dual 2 forms from that. So it's got 42 scalars. And moreover, it's a superconformal theory. The superconformal group is OSP8/8 star, whose bosonic subgroup consists of the conformal group 06, 2 in six dimensions, times the USP8 R symmetry group, but it's got 32 ordinary supersymmetries plus 32 conformal supersymmetries. So it's perhaps the first example where in the literature where you have a theory with 64 supersymmetries.
Is it
not
that again for sound strength
theory? That's what I'm arguing. So I started off with M theory. So the argument is that either this is the only multiplet in of all the possible supermultiplets which have got spin. This is the only multiplet along with one other which I'll mention in a moment, which when you reduce to four dimensions, has got maximum spin 2. This is the only one which hasn't appeared anywhere in the M theory game yet.
So the Chomet problem is there some near horizon geometry of F5 brains that gives you 64 supercharges?
You'd have to say, have to be a brain. If it was, if the usual picture was true, it would have to be in a theory which has got, had 64 linearly realized supersymmetries, right, which would necessarily take you to a theory which is more than spin 2.
Does this have gravitational anomalies?
It doesn't even have gravity, and which is what I'm about to come to.
So this is Chris, is this a unique sort of conformal complement in six dimensions that is non-gravitational, has a high spin?
It's a unique one with 32 supersymmetries. Yeah. So the superconformal multiplets are the n comma zero ones in six dimensions, as you might.
Are there Kyle representations of this node? Well, this is the Fourier representation. I guess I'm asking, are there any chiral non-Fourier representations of this algebra?
What do you mean by chiral representation?
You know, you can classify the representations of the conformal group. And so a non-free would be such that the primary doesn't satisfy, for example, d square of the primary equals 0. If it's d squared, the primary equals 0, then it's free, you know, so it's free theory. So, and there are probably chiral representations. Yeah. You know, if the theory is to be interactive, there should be chiral representations.
Yeah, there's been quite a lot just done formally about building up the representations of the n comma 0 conformal field theory. So, that, so in the literature, yes, there are. Everything you could do in the 2 comma 0 has got a generalization to n comma 0.
Yeah, but your free multiplet is always just free, and the interaction's gone for other multiplets. Yeah. Here, I think the interaction in the same multiplet that's free, right? So that's a different issue.
Well, here you've, in the 2 comma 0 theory, you've only got 2 comma 0, you've only got the one multiplet, you haven't got other multiplets, so it's analogous.
Right, there are other representations of the superconformal algebra.
Yeah, and there are other representations here too.
Right, but here we want to say that the theory has only this representation, right?
Yeah, so, okay, let me say what I was going to say, and then you can tell me, rather than you telling me, but what I was going to say, the next point is that the dimension reduction of this multiplet down to 5 dimensions gives a supergravity multiplet.
And it's just the
Bmans
and the
bars, you said? No, I haven't. So the punchline is that it's not a theory of gravity. Instead of G mu nu, there's a new there's a gauge field which has got 4 indices, which is antisymmetric in those two and antisymmetric in those two, and symmetric under interchange in pairs. And so it's got the same symmetries as the Riemann tensor. This is a gauge field, so it has a gauge symmetry under which you have delta C goes like the derivative of a parameter, and it has a field strength which is two derivatives on C, which you take by taking two derivatives and then totally anti-symmetrizing here, totally anti-symmetrizing here, so you get something with six indices with totally antisymmetric here and totally antisymmetric here. And this satisfies a self-duality condition that G equals star G. In other words, on these three indices, it's self-dual. So what that means is that just like in the Yang-Mills case, you went from a vector field to a self-dual 2 form. Here you go from a metric to a to a 4 form with a self-dual field strength. Well, not a 4 form, a fourth rank tensor.
Why do you need two derivatives to find the field strength?
The same reason why you need two derivatives for the curvature in terms of the metric. It's because it's not totally anti-symmetric.
So what's the equation of motion? Sorry.
This is.
Oh, just that.
Yeah. Just like
the Bianchi identity.
Just like H equals H star H.
Great. So the Bianchi identity is what?
There's two Bianchi identities. One is that there's a first Bianchi identity, which is where you anti-symmetrize on 4 indices there, and that gives 0. There's a second one, which you take a derivative here, and you skew on, I think, 4 indices, and that gives 0.
Excuse me, because H equals star H is not really an equation of motion, it's a constraint. You have also the H equals 0. So the question is, what is the counterpart of the Einstein's equations here?
Well,
okay, so
DG.
Okay, so the analog, so here, this implies that D star H is zero, and you're asking what the analog of that is here, and that is GM NP MQR equals zero with one contraction.
This so, is the thing that reduces Einstein's equation?
It's more complicated than that, so I'm going to explain. There's a lot to explain here.
Linearized.
This is at the linearized level.
Linear.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay, so the argument, the question of the nonlinearity, so okay, but just before saying that, so for, roughly speaking, the one we can think of the 4, 0 multiplet as being the tensor product of two 2, 0 multiplets. And so, for example, the product of two forms, two B's, will give something with four indices, and that's one way of thinking about how that comes about. And similarly, the product of two vector fields gives you a two-form field, and so on. And the same issues which arise here in question of the interacting theory also arise here. One can show quite quickly that there is no there are no nonlinear modifications to the field theory equations, which reduce to the gravity field equations in five dimensions, just like there are no modifications over here to the field equations, which reduce to the Young-Mills equations. So it's, but nonetheless, there's good reasons to believe that this theory exists. So that if this theory exists at an interacting level, and that's a big if, it would have to be something unconventional and perhaps non-local. And that ties in with our comments that maybe that we know in any case that from holography that there's something non-local going on in gravity. And so this.
You want it to be conformal. You want it to be conformal.
Yeah.
So
there's a lot more to say. I mean,
why
so.
Why does it have to be non-local? I don't understand.
Okay. There's a question about what I mean by that is that certainly, okay, it doesn't have to be non-local. It has to break the rules somehow. And I don't, it has to break some of the rules somehow. It's not.
You have to measure on the black hole spectrum of high energy. Yeah. You shouldn't have a volume of
Okay, so what I'm saying is it doesn't exist as a classical field theory with field theory local field covariant field theory interactions. And so it's something else, and it's whatever it is, it's analogous to whatever this is, but I don't know what this is either.
As a quantum field theory, it very well
exists. Very well exists.
How could that match on the black hole?
It's not clear how you trace it through.
Yeah. Chris, if we go back, let's look just at the linearized level where we understand something. So what else is there in the six-dimensional theory besides this C field? Are there scalars?
Yes, okay, so I was going to start a bit later, but I can do that bit now.
I'm just wondering, it looks like you need something else in the theory, like a vector, and what's the action for the scalars?
So we have a 4, 0 theory with, so in six dimensions, the little group is SU2 cross SU2, or so 4, and then there's an R-symmetry group, USP8, and so you have a theory in the 5, 1, 1, which is this field CMNPQ. So if you write it in dotted spinner notation, it's got four undotted spinners totally symmetrized. So in Lightcone gauge, this would correspond to a field which had this Young tableau. Then the next, there's a field in the 4, 1, 8, and that's a gravitino, but with an extra index.
Okay.
And there's 8 of those. Then there's 27 soft dual 2 forms.
The gravitino is anti-symmetric on MN.
Yeah, sorry. This is anti-symmetric in MN. And this has got a field strength where you take a curl on these three indices, and that field strength is self-dual. So I should put a plus there.
So you have a flat metric. I mean, you would know what spinners are. This is a flat six-dimensional theory.
So for the moment I'm talking about a theory in flat six dimensions with a background metric. And
but it's just not dynamical, you're saying.
Yeah. And that raises a number of questions, which I was going to come to later, but perhaps I should address now since we've come to them. Let me just finish this list. So there's some spin half fields.
except the magic fluctuations of the things which are no longer.
And 42 scalars. That's the super multiplet. So it's all, so they're all singlets under one in SU2, and so these are represented by symmetric spinners. So in spinner notation, if you introduce spinners in the two of this is C alpha beta gamma delta, totally symmetrized. This is a alpha beta gamma, totally symmetrized, and so on.
Does the theory in five dimensions have things that look like they're becoming light besides the abelian instantons?
The issue is that there are solutions which are half supersymmetric, which have all the right properties to do this, but they're all singular. And there's a question about whether they should correspond to just with the abelian instant, whether they should correspond to BPS states in the theory.
You have all the solutions, not just the abelian instant.
Yeah. So in the linearized theory, you just use supersymmetry to get things like linearized gravitational instantons and so on.
When you reduce this theory, you have the CL and Q, and it gets too late on the reduced dimension due to the graviton. Can you do the reduction with the legs?
Yeah. So I could do that bit now. I haven't answered. I'll come back to Gary's question then, and I'll answer that one then. So if I forget, remind me to come back and talk about the symmetries associated with this and the role of the background metric. So maybe I'll make some space. So starting in G equals 5, first of all, so I'm going to do gravity, Young-Mills here, and well, I'm going to look at the abelian theory, so I'm going to do Maxwell theory on this column and gravity over here. In this case, one can dualize this in five dimensions to a two-form gauge field. And one way of thinking about the duality symmetries is to go through physical light cone gauge. So in five dimensions, you have indices ij, which run from 1 to 3, a vector of the SO3 little group. So here we have, this would correspond to, you'd have an ai in the vector, and you could, a vector of O3 is the same, is equivalent in representation to a 2 form, which is epsilon ij k ak. So in other words, the representation which represented by the Young tableau of a box in O3 is equivalent to the one with two antisymmetric indices. And so one way of thinking about the duality is you could go for light cone gauge, rewrite everything in terms of two forms, and then one could look for to covariantize it to get something back in terms of the two-form field. So you could do the same thing over here. So you get a transverse trace, in light cone gauge, we get a transverse traceless graviton represented by this Young tableau. But now we can dualize each vector index to a two-form. So we could have something where you place the first index by a two-form, we get something which just goes like dijk, which is antisymmetric in two, representing these two, and the third one, where the totally antisymmetric part of this vanishes, which is what this means. And then you could dualize on both to get something with this Young tableau and get something with four indices. And these would all be equivalent realizations of the same physical degrees of freedom. And so this has all the symmetries of the Weyl tensor in four dimensions. So it's because it's in light cone gauge, all the traces vanish as well. So now when you go to six, if we have a general two-form BNN, this would go to, so B equals six. This would give rise to a vector field A mu equals B mu 5 and 2-form So Kaplan indices are six-dimensional and Greek indices are five-dimensional. And if this is self-dual, then the self-duality of the fields, this field strength would mean that in five dimensions, this two-form is dual to this vector field. So although for an unconstrained two-form you get two fields, the self-duality would mean that you'd only get one independent field. Okay? Now, the same thing goes if we have a field CMNPQ. So dimensionally reducing to five dimensions, we get something which goes like C mu mu rho sigma, C mu 5, and C mu mu rho 5. So this would be the thing which I called C. So this would be a field C mu mu rho sigma. This would be a field D mu mu, H mu mu. And this would be a field D mu mu rho. So I forgot to say that these light cone gauge objects could then have corresponding gauge fields, covariant gauge fields, which must have the same number of indices by Lorentz covariance, and must have the right gauge invariances, so you can get rid of all the stuff to get down to something with just these degrees of freedom. And it's not too hard to work out what those gauge invariances are, but I won't go through that. But now we see that dimensionally reducing this, we get three objects like this, one like this, one like this, and one like this. And so an unconstrained C satisfying this field equation would give three gravitons in five dimensions. Well, in fact, it gives two, it potentially gives three gravitons in five dimensions. But the self-duality of this field from this equation means that they're all essentially—they're all the same. This is the field you get here is dual to this one. The field you get here is dual to this one. So in fact, you only get one graviton. So it's just the same as here. It looks like you're getting two fields, two vector fields, but in fact, the self-duality means there's only one independent one at the end. And there's a similar game you can play for the other degrees of freedom when you reduce. That works out nicely. So in six dimensions, there are two multiplets here. There's a 1, there's a 2, 0, which has got this field, and there's a 1, 1, which has got a six-dimensional vector field. And the same way over here, there's a 4, 0 multiplet, which starts off with one of these fields. There's a 2, 2 multiplet, which is the usual supergravity multiplet, which starts off with a vector field. The highest thing. And there's also a 3,1 multiplet, which starts off with something like with three indices and a self-duality constraint. And it's intriguing that the scalars in this multiplet have got the right number to fit into a into a coset space F4 over USP6 cross USP2.
Sorry, I got lost. What are you describing?
Okay, I'm talking about the possible multiplets in six dimensions. The numbers with 16 supersymmetries, there are two possibilities: 1,1 and 2,0. This one's the highest spin object is a 2-form here, and a 1-form here. And with 32 supersymmetries, there are three possibilities: 4,0, 2,2, and 3,1. And I was describing what the highest spin object was in each of those. It's the usual supergravity multiplet. It's the 4,0 one which I started talking about. There's a third one which has got 3,1 supersymmetry, isn't superconformal, starts off with a 3-index object. It's got both 2-forms and 1-forms, and the scalars fit inside a coset space which the group F4 raises its head.
So if you play this game and you could go from 6 dimensions to 4, will this 4,0 reduce to n equals 4 superconformal multiple?
No, it will reduce to n equals 8 supergravity, which is not conformal.
But I mean, this reduces in 5 to n equals 8 fine cray supergravity, right?
Yeah. So
is it n equals 8 supergravity in 5? It's the same as n equals 4. You can rewrite it as a conformal supergravity in 4.
The conformal supergravity in four dimensions has got an R squared action.
I know.
But what I'd be reducing to would be something with an R action, not an R squared. So it's different.
So this would not be then the analog of n equals 4 supernormals can couple uniquely, right? To n equals 4 conformal.
Yeah, it's different. It's different.
So this is not the analog of the conformal coupling of 2-0.
No. Okay.
You're saying there's no growth in the six dimensions, but could I formulate this theory on the curved background?
No. So what it's saying is okay. So basically, you'd have to. The metric has been replaced by this object here. So you'd have to be looking at a configuration.
The metric or the deviation?
Okay, so
that's what I'm very confused about. Why couldn't I formulate this theory in the curve?
You can calculate the background out of background.
That's what, actually, let me come back.
Your equations of motion make sense. It's covariant equations of motion.
Yeah. Okay, so let me first of all, okay, this what I've got so far is three equations in a flat background space time. And what I have to do is address the question about what would be the thing which would correspond in five dimensions to a curved manifold. But before I do that, let me say, make some general comments about the interactions, and then I will come back to that question, which is related to Gary's question, which I haven't had a chance to come back to either.
Maybe I should give you another
take
one.
Take a ticket.
If you look at the spectrum of, say, extremal Riesner nodes from or extremal black holes with charges, presumably there are some of those that are BBS that you can track through this limit. Have you done that?
Yeah. So okay. So that's good. Okay. So. Okay. Let me just say quickly what happens. So what happens is that in the what happens is the naught brains and one brains in both of these theories, in five dimensions are naught brains and one brains, and both of these, and in both theories, these are combined into strings in six dimensions. So the naught brains come from wrapped strings, and the strings come from unwrapped strings, if you like.
Okay.
So basically there are 27 kinds of string which couple to these 27 two-form fields.
You say these are coming from black holes.
Well, I've got a free theory in six, at the moment. I've just got a free theory in six dimensions. So,
where did the strings come from?
The trouble is, I'm being taken out of the logical sort of order. So, but
if you're going to come back to this,
it depends on how. Okay. Okay. In case I don't come back to it, maybe I should address this quickly now. And which is that in the free theory, there's in the theory, there are BPS states. If you look at the supersymmetry algebra, there's in five dimensions you've got a vector. You've got a vector field. You've got some scalar central charges, and you've got some vector central charges, where these are anti-symmetric in these two indices, and they've got vanishing symplectic trace. And then there's one extra charge, which is K, which I call K, which is a singlet under the USP R symmetry group. And these are the central charges you get both for the 2,0 and the 4,0. The only difference is whether A and B run from 1 to 4 or 1 to 8. So A, B equals 1 to N, where N equals 4 or 8. And then there's also some two-form stuff, which I won't talk about. And these are the charges carried by electrically charged naught brains coupling to the vector fields A mu AB. And these are the strings magnetically charged with respect to this A mu AB. And in the 2,0, in the five-dimensional Young-Mills theory, these are just electrically, these are sort of things like W bosons. These are massive into a massive vector multiplet. And these are magnetically charged strings. And the K, charge K, is a thing which is carried by these instantonic naught brains. And these are singlets under the USP, under the R symmetry group. And when you go up to six dimensions, then the six dimensional momentum goes to P mu and K. So this becomes a six in the 2,0 or 4,0 theory, this charge becomes the extra component of momentum. And there's a string charge AB, which gives rise to Z and Z mu when you dimensionally reduce. So the sixth component is just the scalar central charge, saying that this comes from strings wrapped around the circle or unwrapped. And so these are so in each case, these are things which couple to the BMN field AB, which is antisymmetric and symplectic trace-free in these indices. So 27 of these in the in this multiplet. So what this is saying is that all of the Knorr plane, all of the in particular, all of the Knorr planes in five dimensions become are viewed as wrapped strings from this point of view. And so that means that those kind of limits which we were talking about before, in which could correspond to a decompactification in which some Knorr planes become massless, for example, say, for example, Kaluza-Klein Tower of nodes becoming massless from the M theory on T6 picture, would in this picture be seen as strings becoming tensionless, just in the same way as in the 2,0 theory, the place where you had W bosons becoming massless would be seen from the six-dimensional point of view as a limit in which strings are becoming tensionless.
As gravity solutions, you're saying these are zero horizon area, singular?
So far I'm just talking about kinematics and the free theory. And I still haven't come back to the question which I've been asked several times, which is about interactions and so on, which I'm going to come back to now.
Let's... But while you're on this, I thought you're going a bit fast. And so there's a six-dimensional theory. This is a conventional kind of six-dimensional theory in which you just decompactify one of the M circles.
Yeah.
And this is distinguished by some ratio of central charges diverging.
Yeah.
There's a different limit that you're looking for in which, from six-dimensional a different way, in some different ratio of central charges diverges. For example, a wrapped string will get very heavy as compared to an unwrapped string because wrapping a big circle.
Yeah.
But don't you know the whole formula for, it's you have 30 supersymmetries, you know the whole formula for how the central charges depend on the moduli, and don't you know whether or not such a point is in the moduli space?
Yeah, okay, so let me address that. First of all, in the 2,0 theory, when we take Jiang Mills squared to infinity, there's some other scalings which one needs to do to specify what one's doing. Here, in five dimensions, you have dimension one scalars. And six dimensions, in a conformal field theory in six dimensions, the natural dimension for scalars is two. So the natural thing to write is phi equals phi over Jiang Mill squared. And so the idea is that in the limit you take Jiang Mill squared to infinity, you keep this fixed, so you get this making sense in six dimensions. And the tensions of the strings are given by the expectation values of these objects, of phi, so which is, in other words, it's in the usual picture, it's Higgs divided by your Jiang Mill squared, the magnetic strings. So keeping this fixed physically corresponds to keeping the tensions of the strings fixed. Now, this is all very well, a very nice picture, but even in the 2,0 theory, there are severe problems when it tries to look at what happens for things depending non-linearly on the couplings. So, for example, in five dimensions, we know that there's a scalar potential which goes like V, goes like phi to the fourth, commutator of phi squared traced. Now, in von Aschow, this goes up to six dimensions, so you've also got the kinetic term grad phi squared. So in six dimensions, you can write grad phi squared without any dimensional coupling constants. But one can't write anything which reduces to phi to the fourth. The natural thing to write here would be something like phi to the fourth. But one can't write that down in the Lagrangian in six dimensions without any dimensional coupling constants. So it's not possible that there's any... So it's saying that, again, that there's no local way of writing this interaction down in six dimensions. It must be that whatever's going on, that either these don't go straightforwardly in a nonlinear case to scalars, or there's something more, or there's some kind of thing like a star product of some interaction which has got some dimension in it. So it's saying that that really we don't have very little understanding of the 2,0 theory about what's happening at the nonlinear level. And we're just lucky that here the string tensions went like e to the phi. So for some things we know how to make sense of, but one doesn't know how to make sense of things which depend non-linearly on the phis. And so in saying that you can't write down a field theory for the 2.0 theory, there are problems not just, people usually think that it's problems that are to do with the two-form gauge fields and hooking up indices. There are problems already at the scalar sector where things go badly wrong. Now in the four-comma-zero theory, again, I want to keep fixed the dimension two scalars, but again, there are problems in how one deals with non-linear terms in the scalar fields. In particular, we know that in five dimensions, a lot of things depend on exponentials of scalars. For example, the string tensions depend on things like exponentials of scalars. And again, there's a problem about knowing how to make sense of that in six dimensions. Again, one guess would be the interactions of some sort of has got some kind of product involving a dimension, like a star product, or something which we don't yet know how to understand. But so a lot of the problems in really understanding what's happening in the six-dimensional picture and when one takes various limits in the nonlinear theory depend crucially on knowing how one thinks about these exponentials in the higher-dimensional theory. And I don't have a good answer to that other than to say that it's the same problem in the Young-Mills theory.
Do you think this theory arises somewhere in the moduli space of M theory on T6?
Okay, so the limit I'm thinking is that is one where I keep where normally you have dimension zero scalars in five. In supergravity, you usually have dimension zero scalars. So one defines a scalar which is this divided by L squared to make a dimension two scalar. I want to keep the dimension two scalars fixed. So that means that as I scale L, I'm also scaling all of the scale. I do a conformal transformation on the whole moduli space at the same time. So I'm blowing that up.
L is the lower dimensional Mach scale.
Yeah. So I want to keep. So in conformal field theory, the natural dimension of objects is scalar fields of dimension two, and these are the tensions of the strings in the linearized theory. So it seems a natural thing to keep fixed, but
it's a natural thing.
Yeah. Yeah. That's right. I mean, it's certainly true that it's not the naive dimension. Whatever happens, I'm not even sure that in six dimensions that scalar fields are the right ways of describing these degrees of freedom. It's things which correspond to five scalar fields in five dimensions.
Are you keeping L11 fixed and taking L to infinity?
In principle, if this point exists, you know how to find it. Because what he has is 27 strings whose tensions he's holding fixed while he's sending the Planck mass to infinity.
Okay.
So find the limit in which that's true. I mean, can't do it in my head.
The problem is that the tension of the strings depend on exponentials. And whatever these go to in six dimensions, they don't go to simple exponentials or simple scalar fields for the dimensional argument.
The tensions of the string, in the 2.0 case, the tensions of the strings were linear in the phis.
Yeah.
And we're just holding the capital phis fixed, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So here you've got, again, dimension two scalar fields, which I thought would just be the tensions of the...
No, the tension of the strings tend to be exponentials.
They weren't in the 2.0 theory. Why are they in this theory?
Because the couplings are different. In the supergravity theory, in five dimensions, you get r plus e to the a phi f squared. F squared. And it's this is e to the a phi which comes in to give the tension.
I'm a little bit. What's the dimensionful thing multiplying it then?
In six dimensions, there are no dimensionful parameters. That's the trouble.
Wait. A tension has dimensions.
Yeah. In five dimensions, there's it's all set by the Planck scale. So you've got
Planck scale is going to infinity.
No, it's going to zero.
Going to zero, whatever.
Yeah.
It's going away. Whatever.
Yeah. The tension is 1/L². It's 1/L². Okay.
Yeah, but how am I? So what am I sending? I'm sending e to the phi.
Time's getting on. Let me try and say two more things. One is I want to say something about what this means when you dimensionally reduce to four dimensions and relation to S-duality. And the second is to finally come to back to Gary's question about what happened about the role of the background metric and background independence, and the and what replaces geometry. So let me try and speed up a bit and try and get that done before, certainly before cookies. So going down on a further circle, so going down from down to d equals 4, for a theory, in this case, we've got just a field theory on in a background space-time. So if we go down on the 2 torus, the resulting theory should be invariant under diffeomorphisms on the torus. And so in particular, there's an SL2 Z symmetry, which comes from that. And so in the abelian theory, this is comes out as a naturally as a familiar symmetry of the equation of the four, n equals 4 equations of motion. And roughly speaking, you get F and star F combining into an SL2 doublet with some modifications depending on the moduli of the torus, but schematically something like that. And you have derived transformations which rotate the two into each other.
Excuse me, this SL2Z is a subgroup of this E77Z, or is it?
Here I'm just doing Young-Mills theory.
Oh, it's the same. Okay.
So in the moment I'm going to, it's more complex. There are issues which arise there, which is why I'm doing it. There's a number of issues which arise there. Let me do that here. So if I take the free theory in 6 dimensions in a background space-time, so I've got a free theory based on these weird fields in a background space-time. I take that background space-time to be a 2 torus. It's got background diffeomorphism invariance. So again, I'll pick up an SL2Z. So I get an SL2Z symmetry of the free supergravity theory, or the free gravity theory. And the amusing thing is here that if I look at the Riemann curvature with 4 indices, I can dualize on the first 2, or on the second 2, or on both, and you end up with the 4 of these fitting into a matrix which transforms as a symmetric matrix under SL2. And this is a symmetry, an amusing SL2 symmetry of the linearized equations of motion. And it relates field equations to Bianchi identities. This is the thing which naturally couples to magnetic charge, which violates the Bianchi identities of this. This naturally couples to the magnetic analog of mass, which are things which violate the first Bianchi identity of the linearized gravity theory here. In other words, there'd be sources which couple to R mu nu rho sigma, totally anti-symmetrized, which normally would be 0, but this would be the field which would naturally couple to sources coupling to that. So it'd be a magnetic analog of mass. And a similar thing is going on here in the dualities which would relate the 4 of these to each other. Now, in the
magnetic analog of mass, I mean, this really works.
In the linearized theory, yes.
So
the next thing I want to say is that in the magnetic, in the interacting theory, none of this works. So let me, even on the Young-Mills side. So let me sort of make that comment. So it fails on both columns at the same way. And when you turn on the non-abelian interactions, this SL2 is no longer a symmetry of the n equals four dimensional equations of motion. Basically, because the minimal coupling, because this symmetry would try and change the photon to a dual photon, but the explicit minimal couplings of the Young-Mills theory explicitly violate that symmetry. So this SL2 is not a symmetry of the Young-Mills theory in 4 dimensions. In the same way, this symmetry is not a symmetry of the Einstein theory or the supergravity in 4 dimensions.
So, Chris, SL2C is a symmetry of the full n equals 4.
That's what I'm about to say. Okay. But in this case, what we believe is that the full theory here is SL2 invariant, and what we believe is that the field theory isn't the complete description,
right,
especially at the conformal point where you don't have an S matrix and one doesn't and whole notion of field theory is not necessarily the right language. And so one way of seeing what's going wrong is that as one's turning to towards the conformal point in which the Higgs expectation values vanish, what one's finding is that as well as the W bosons becoming massless, as you would expect, as you're taking the Higgs expectation value to zero, the magnetic monopoles are also becoming massless. There, and a whole SL2 multiplet of dions, which are all related to the W boson, all also become massless simultaneously. So you've got these mutually non-local fields, mutually non-local light degrees of freedom, all becoming massless at the same time. And whatever description you need to, you should be using, should be one which takes all of those light degrees of freedom into account. And that can't be done within the notions of field theory. And we've got very good reasons for believing now that, to believe this duality symmetry and not the field theory, that basically there's more to the field theory than comes from here. And this is, related to the fact that it's coming from a 2,0 theory in six dimensions, where again, we don't believe the field theory. There's something more interesting going on, and something which you don't yet understand. And that, and all of that has an analog down here, and it's the same point that because we don't understand, there is nothing the classical local non, there wasn't the classical local covariant field theory. So it's, again, it's breaking some of the rules, and it's not clear what the right way to, the best way of thinking about it is. Maybe it's something to do with tensionless strings, or something to do with membranes, or there's a number of ideas around, but none of them seems to quite work. So the same thing is going on here. And there's a possibility worth contemplating that maybe the field theory isn't the right guide in the supergravity theory. But there could be extra things going on, that maybe the duality symmetry or something to do with the idea that there may be magnetic analogues of mass playing a role. And that, that the free theory may be, in fact, just as in the Maxwell, in one case, the free theory may be a much better guide as to what's going on than the interacting field theory, which only describes interactions between, can only describe interactions between certain kinds of particles. In writing down a Lagrangian field theory, one's automatically precluding the possibility of including sort of magnetic charges, non-abelian magnetic charges.
You can't find them, it's all of them. Right.
Yes.
Can you find magnetic or dionic masses, the solitons of supergravity?
Well, in some ways, these are related to nut charges and to Kaluza-Klein monopoles. So, well, okay, this charge K, which I mentioned in the superalgebra, is the thing which, when you dimensionally reduce down to four dimensions, becomes a magnetic charge of a Kaluza-Klein monopole. So it's related to the kind of charge. So just like that charge K was related to an instanton charge in the Yang-Mills theory, it's related to something like a gravitational instanton charge in the gravitational theory. And so, for example, it's not quite the Taub nut charge. It's so, for example, the kind of thing. So, if you had a five-dimensional manifold being time cross a four manifold, it'd be something like the integral of R wedge R, traced. Sort of the that topological class would be representing that, just like integral of F squared with F wedge F. The Yang-Mills case would be giving that. So it's essentially a gravitational instanton number.
So those aren't asymptotically Euclidean, right?
So well, the non-singular ones necessarily have funny boundary conditions, but there are singular ones which are asymptotically Euclidean. And it's a question about, so it's an issue, again, it's an issue about what kind of singular solutions are should be allowed in the theory.
In the 2,0 theory, I have a way of understanding that the degrees of freedom are very non-trivial because n figures are Hank cube.
Yeah.
Do you have anything like this?
Yeah. Well, there isn't an n in this thing, so it's the entropy right. Will go like a number, and it won't. I don't know what that number
R
is.
R.
So it's the gravitational instanton number.
Order.
The order. Yeah.
Isn't that always positive? Or, you don't find things with.
Yeah, it's a signature. It's the other one. It's not the other number. It's the signature. But I mean, there are a number of issues which about. I mean, one of the key things to understand is really what's going on with these. Whether there are extra BPS states of this kind in the theory. I can write down singular solutions, which seem to play the right role and fit into the right sort of supermultiplets.
It's still out of the
yes, I could start up in six dimensions, and then by reducing, then it automatically does. But Let me just finish by finally getting back to Gary's question and the question of background independence and whether or not this whole picture is the right one to discuss all these things. As I've already alluded to, there are two, in the six-dimensional theory, there are two types of symmetries. First of all, in five dimensions, there's two types. If you write the metric as a to mu nu plus h mu nu, there are two types of the diffeomorphism symmetry can be split up into two different ways. We write this as a background metric. One is one where the background diffeomorphisms, where you have delta g bar mu nu equals grad mu psi nu, and delta h mu nu equals the derivative of h with respect to psi. And the other is where you have the background independent, and delta h mu nu is a gauge field. So there's background diffeomorphisms and gauge fields. So lifting this up to the free theory in six dimensions, this lifts up to the background diffeomorphism symmetry of the theory regarded as a free field theory in six dimensions. And this lifts to the gauge symmetry of this gauge field, in which you have a parameter chi m n p, and which chi m 5 5 is the diffeomorphism parameter, and the other bits fit into the gauge of natural gauge transformations for the other objects. So these split up in, so you get two different things coming up in six dimensions. Now, if there is an interacting form of the theory in six dimensions, a background metric can't play any fundamental role. One way of seeing that from supersymmetry is there's no 4,0 supergravity multiplet. So the whole theory must be, if it is to exist, must be a theory where you, instead of having a metric, you must have some nonlinear theory based on something which in the free theory reduces to this fourth rank object.
You still have a background.
No, what I'm saying is that in the free theory, we know that in the free theory there's a background, we can write it as a free theory in a background. And in that, if the free theory in the background, we can make sense of all the things I've said about what it means to pactify on a circle of radius r, and all of those things which have gone into what I've been talking about, and all the things I've been able to check, are all based on that picture of a free theory in the background. And what I'm trying to argue is that, in that free theory in the background, there are two kinds of symmetries. One is one where you have background diffeomorphism invariance, and the other is one where you have this gauge invariance of this C field. Now, we know in five-dimensional gravity that the way of thinking about it is not to split, that this is an artificial thing to do, and that really you should think about this full gauge invariance as the full graviton. And all of these two different kinds of, splitting into these two different kinds of symmetries, an artifact of the background split. They don't have any intrinsic meaning. And the full object is the thing which naturally survives. And if there is an interacting six-dimensional theory, there seems to be no natural role for a background metric. It should be something which...
So the thing that looks like a background metric, we can construct that out of this kind of thing.
Yeah, when you compactify on a circle of radius r, we've seen explicitly that... where has it gone? That C mu 5 mu 5 gives the five-dimensional metric.
Say those words of compactifying on a circle of radius r.
Yeah, that's
what you're saying is that there could be some other backgrounds for C which wouldn't look at all like backgrounds for G.
What I'm saying is that has to be the case, that whatever, if an interacting theory exists, all our intuitions about how you construct such a theory are off.
So then if you take that and you put it on a background and put it in a circle to like something else,
yeah,
then you can play
this. It should be something which in some has a certain limit which reduces to what I called a free theory in a background in six dimensions. But more generally, it would have some more general structure.
So the equation is not G equals star G. I mean, I thought that G equals star G refers to...
That,
right,
for free theory...
Let me ask again about the free theory on a curved space. I could take your equations and formulate them on a curved
that's
space.
A long thing to do.
That will never be. I would never be able to do that in a background independent way. I mean, if I was to do that, I would find a different theory in every single background. And also, I would lose the supersymmetry because there's no way of writing a general back curve background in a 4,0 supersymmetric way, because there is no such thing as a 4,0 supergravity.
For the 2,0, I mean, you can talk about, you can study some aspects of the Mann-Abelian theory to discuss the older parameters, which are closed surfaces.
Yeah.
And you see how the older parameters go down, even for the Mann-Abelian theory, so with the full interacting theory. So can you do something like this for the C field and for indices?
Yeah. I'm not even sure. I mean, even in five dimensions, I mean, first of all, we have to decide what the order parameters are for gravity.
That's my problem.
And if you could tell me what the order parameters are for gravity, I could try and look for a generalization. But it's that I don't know.
Can you interpret this C field as a way to measure areas of two-dimensional surfaces? So the d area square is c a b c d times d s a b d s c d.
Yeah. So a natural guess would be that this would be a norm on two forms, sort of infinitesimal area elements. So that'd be a natural thing you could try and do with an object like that. But so a metric is a norm on sort of infinitesimal lengths.
Mm-hmm.
This object, because it's like that, it can be thought of as to define a norm on infinitesimal area elements or on infinitesimal two forms. Yeah.
How do you integrate that into
what does that mean? Take a surface.
How do you integrate that into a gauge of various options?
You know, you take an area stretched in directions mu nu, right, and its size is ds mu nu, just like to form with upper index set, and to just declare that the area squared of this infinitesimal beast is c a b c d times ds a b d s.
There are two pairs of antisymmetries, so it looks like pairs of surfaces.
Yeah, because
you can transport the single
quadratic form associated with an area that goes to what?
What is how big it is.
Well, it's supposed to be
it's
a way of defining the size of an area. I mean,
you don't take this seriously in direct.
So, for example, okay, it's.
I mean, you need boundaries.
If you think of.
It's the same thing.
It's the same thing with a normal metric. It's.
Think of a vector.
So now
take two vectors and
wedge
them together.
So normal two forms instead of one form.
It's a product on
it.
You can make a product of two open areas, but making a product of two closed is more difficult because they move apart.
So you'll be talking about the tangent planes to these things rather than two. Just like with curves and vectrix.
So you can integrate each of the two indices. It's difficult to have pairs of.
In the case where you have metric C A B C D can be written as G A C G B D minus G A D G B C.
Yeah.
Right. And this is the way how you can use it to measure area of infinitesimal vectors. Yeah. Two surfaces which are kind of wedge products of two vectors. And you have two pairs of the indices because you always measure ds square, like square metric or dA square. Right?
But more generally, you could have C's which weren't of that form, only special ones of that form. So.
Can you somehow couple it to 2,0 after 2,0 multiply? Maybe to 2,0 multiply. Say, by considering C as a mass for less of 2.
Not in a supersymmetric way. If you coupled it to 2,0, you break 4,0 down to
2,0 somehow, to make it
4,0. No, but you can only couple. In a normal coupling, you can only couple. You can only couple multiplets with the same kind of supersymmetry. So it would be like trying to couple 1,1. I mean, 2,0 multiplets to 1,0 multiplets. You couldn't do that in a 2,0 invariant way. Just the counting of degrees of freedom wouldn't work, for example.
Is this theory supposed to be diffeomorphism invariant?
The five-dimensional theory is diffeomorphism invariant. We see that the six-dimensional, the diffeomorphisms come from invariants with a parameter with three indices. So I mean, one thing is that it could...
So I should ask what gauge group was that generated?
Yeah. I mean, it could be that this should be thought of as being CMNPQ psi Q for some diffeomorphism generator. Or it could be that this should be thought of independently of that.
What's the bracket of two gauge transformations, do you know?
Well, I've only got the linearized theory, so it's zero. But I need to have them on linear theory to get something non-zero. But I know that in
the linearized theory, you can still take a bracket of two diffeomorphisms and get the...
We've the linearized diffeomorphisms rather than the full.
Wouldn't we still learn that we get one vector field, the lead derivative of one vector field? That's the bracket, even in the linearized theory. I think we could.
Yeah. Okay. Maybe you're right.
In free theory, well, bracket
of the but from this form of the transformations, you wouldn't.
That's wrong. It's linear in psi 1 and psi 2. It's not psi squared.
Yeah.
I think you would discover the Lie bracket.
Yeah. But if I look at this form of the if I look at this form of the transformations, I will not get any commutator.
No, it's not. I believe that in the linearized theory, you would discover that the bracket of two diffeomorphisms.
Okay. If I look at the
saying is wrong. I think you would discover that the bracket of two diffeomorphisms, two infinitesimal vector fields, is the Lie bracket.
Yeah. If I use this form with this here, then you'd be correct. If I use this form, you get zero. Mm-hmm. And this is it's the analog of this form, which I've got in six dimensions. So I'll get zero. To get something non-zero, I need to have the correction space of order H.
For something delta of field depends on chi.
Yeah.
Such an equation? This chi, MNP.
No, not in the linearized theory. Would have to that would come from the non-linear correction. Okay. So perhaps I should try and bring it to a close. So what I've tried to say is that what I've tried to argue is that there's certainly some very interesting super multiplets in six dimensions. And what I've tried to show is that if they are to play any role in M theory, they must arise in something like the kind of strong coupling limit I've discussed. I've shown you how it would fit in with free theory, that this would naturally arise as some kind of strong coupling limit in some sense of the free supergravity theory, and the whole thing fits together very nicely in the free theory. In the interacting theory, it's very difficult to say anything precise because, first of all, because whatever's going on is going to be in the kind of regime where certainly classical field theory of the usual kind can't play a role, and there must be some new kind of some sort of unusual kind of interactions going on here. Certainly, and I think one of the very important and interesting questions is understanding what's happening in the 2, zero theory. And then the second question is whether something similar could happen in the 4, zero to give an interacting theory. And there are two different scenarios. One is where I take this limit and I get a whole series of, have the mass of this superconformal multiplet plus an infinite tower of 4, zero massive multiplets arising from the things which in the M theory picture would correspond to massive modes of the M theory, string modes, brain modes, Kruitz-Kreis modes, and so on. Or it's an intriguing possibility that just like in the 2, zero theory, that there might be some kind of that the 4, zero superconformal theory might be consistent in its own right. I've got no way of telling from the little I know about the theory which of those two is likely. But in that case, if that was to happen, then you'd have a theory which was just something very like a field theory in principle, and which reduced to supergravity in lower dimensions and has the potential of maybe making sense at the quantum level with only a finite number of degrees of freedom. And that would be a very intriguing possibility.
Did you try to construct by hand a qubit coupling of the C field?
I have tried without success.
It's not possible, or did you just not finish the calculations?
I haven't proved it's not possible, but it's very similar to the same situations with the 2, zero multiplet. Yeah, and it's, so this argument about dimensions already shows that there's problems with understanding what's even for the scalar self interactions. There's problems of understanding what's going on, just because there doesn't seem to be any way of writing down scalar self interactions in six dimensions, let alone anything more complicated with the vector fields.
What would be the coupling constant anyway?
Well, there isn't a dimension. In a six dimensions, there is no coupling constant. So there's no dimensionful coupling constant. And that's the problem with writing down interactions of dimensionful fields. Things are very limited. So anyway, perhaps that would be a good place to stop. Okay, thank you.